George Saunders, thanks for taking part in Page Turners. Tell us about the first book that you've chosen.
Well, I was turned onto this book by a friend, and it's a book called Patriotic Gore by Edmund Wilson. It was written in the early 60s. And it's on the surface, it's a collection of essays about the great literary people of the Civil War era. So it's got the biggies like Lincoln and Douglas, but also some unknown Sidney Lanier and some kind of off-brand writers. But he's such an intelligent writer, so smart, and he's got an incredible introduction that's worth the price of admission, one of the most radical, crazy pieces of writing I've ever read that still applies to the American project. And I love the book because I think when I think about the Civil War, I tend to think, oh, those poor dummies. If only I had been there, I could have figured it out for them. Or if only our culture had been there, we'd have avoided that. But you can see that these were intensely literate, intelligent, compassionate people trying their best not to steer that car into the ditch, and they couldn't help it. And in spite of their beautiful, incredible, articulate writing, the war happened. So it was, for me, it's a good wake-up call to remember that probably any generation is about as smart or dumb as the one that came before it. We remember it in black and white, but in fact, these were really competent, intelligent people, just with a really intractable problem that they had to solve. So that's a great read.
Yeah. Right, right. I mean, we all live within the context of our time, and you can't escape that.
That's right. And I think just to remember that, you know, the problems always seem easier to solve in retrospect, but the ones that we're in the middle of, you know, it sort of made me think that you have to be really vigilant in your moral relation to the world, because the problem that's going to expose your cowardice, for example, or your lack of judgment is not going to announce itself. It's just going to come up on you in a hurry. And actually, I'll segue to a second book, if you don't mind. There's Arthur Miller's autobiography, Time Bends. I've just been reading that in his memoir. And he's got some great stuff on the McCarthy era there. And you can sort of see it almost from the ground level, the way that a person in that time might have actually gone before the committee and named names. It doesn't seem quite as black and white as it does in retrospect. And he's also got a beautiful sections on his relationship with Marilyn Monroe that really kind of humanize her. But it's a great memoir because he's a terrific sentence-by-sentence writer.
Right.
And so when he describes the Depression, it feels like something from a sci-fi book. It doesn't feel like, you know, kind of the Grapes of Wrath. It feels like something that's happening to you in real time. And you could really feel the fear, you know, in the air and so on. So it's a really terrific book.
Yeah, I mean, there's, to me, almost nothing more wonderful than somebody taking a piece of history and, you know, taking it beyond the large scale.
Right.
Taking it to the first person.
Yeah, because that's a great falsifier, isn't it? That, you know, when you get 30 years distance on something, you look back at it with all the wisdom of hindsight. But in the moment, you know, the Depression, it's not named yet. It's just, he describes this ghostly visions of New York City, the streets empty and people with nothing to eat and kind of really just working every angle they can to try to get, you know, something going on. And again, that sense that when you, with hindsight, we're all great moralists, but when a problem that is not named yet, that you haven't seen before, comes and stands right in front of you, like after 9/11, for example, then being an upright person is, I sometimes thought it's just a matter of how you woke up that morning. You know, if you just had the wherewithal to understand the real moral implications or not, might have to do with just what you had for breakfast almost, you know. But I think reading these kind of books is good training. It's the next best thing to having been there yourself, I think.
What's your third pick?
I would say, I'll give you a two-book combo here, if I could. I've been reading a lot of nonfiction lately. I think just because I was sort of between projects and I always like to charge up my understanding of the world with nonfiction when I get a chance. So there's a book called A People's Tragedy by Orlando Fisch. It's a history of the Russian Revolution. And it's an incredible history book just in terms of the way he combines details with novelistic pacing. You really can't put it down. But also, you know, that revolution was so kind of the linchpin of the 20th century, I think, in terms of, you know, they invented genocide, they invented labor camps, and such a hopeful revolution that was really needed and then turned into a total catastrophe with cannibalism and, you know, bands of child prostitutes roaming the street and just a nightmare. So, and it's a great book because he really doesn't take sides. He takes every side. And it was interesting to read that with the Miller, because when Miller was young, he was sort of, as many young people in the 30s, flirting with communism. And they always glorified the Soviets and they could do no wrong. Then to read what was actually going on at that time was really crazy. Just in terms of reminding yourself that any one version of things is usually wrong. The the complexity of the world is just beyond us. So kind of a stance of humility is probably the best one, you know. And then, but then the other book was there's a great book of short stories called Red Cavalry by Isaac Bobble. And he was a contemporary of Hemingway's. And Hemingway said, Bobble does what I do, but more so, better. Bobble was a minimalist, but also kind of a beautiful lyrical writer, too. So he, when he was a young man, he went to Poland to spread the revolution with the Red Cavalry. But he was a Jewish kid. So he went with the Cossacks, who were kind of notoriously anti-Semitic, into Poland to spread this big-hearted revolution. On the way, the Poles would massacre Jews, and then the Cossacks would come in and do it again. And so it's a beautiful book of kind of the unraveling of idealism. This young kid who is in it for the right reasons, and he sees that both sides are behaving badly. But it's also one of the most beautifully written, even in translation, like an incredibly well-written, honed collection of stories. So you'll tell a story, there'll be three pages, and so much happens, and so much is omitted. And it's, for me, it's a great, almost like a palate cleanser. You know, when I go back to write fiction, to be reminded, oh, it can really be this tight. Mm-hmm. You are responsible for every comma and every sentence. And he's got a great line in one of his stories that no sword can pierce the human heart like a period well placed. So he was a master, but he died. The Stalinists killed him when he was 40 or something. And his last words that he was ever heard to say was, as he was being dragged out, he turned to his wife and said, "They didn't let me finish."
And you know that, of course, bringing that back to your own work. I mean, that's the challenge of a great short story writer. Is, you know, how tight can you make it?
Right. And it's, you know, it's kind of crazy, because I would say the tighter you make something, the more intelligent you make it. And the more intelligent you make it, the stronger the bond is with your reader. You know, if I cut out four useless words, I have just said to you, I honor your intelligence. I know you'll get this. There's something that's implied by this phrase. If I take that phrase out, you'll still be there with me. And we'll be there more intimately because I've trusted your intelligence. And that's the whole sort of psychology of the short story. So sometimes, you know, the best short story would just be like one semicolon. That's it.